Blog Talk Radio.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, and feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank ReTalk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT, community organization. Tonight's topic, the bliss point. To some, eating is quite the pleasure. To others, it is a method of maintaining good health. What is the harm in preparing or purchasing food that is sinfully delicious? Has the food industry exploited our need and desire for food? From Helio in the Endocrine Today, with the bliss points and mouth feel, food industry plays role in hedonic pleasure eating habit. That hedonic is like the heathen. So, you know, if you don't know what heathenism is, just to use history, but why they call it that. That's the doctrine that pleasure or happiness is the sole or chief good in life. Comes from the Greek word hedon, which means pleasure. So it means that the food industry is pushing the pleasure principle. Make a long story short, which we're going to get more into it into the show, but basically they're, you know, playing to your pleasure senses. The word frequently carries a judgment tinge today. If someone is described as living a life of hedonism, it's an implication that he or she derives happiness from debauchery rather than, say, spending quality time with family or forming meaningful relationships. That word debauchery, that means you just down low person, you know, you get pleasure from doing, you know, all kinds of, you know, not so good things. Debauchery is extreme indulgence in bodily pleasures and especially sexual pleasures. Behavior involving sex, drugs, alcohol, etc. That is often considered immoral. Okay? So that's a play with words right there with the food thing right there. So, dopamine and addiction, separating myths and facts from Healthline. Because we know a lot of people consider dopamine the pleasure chemical that's in your body. And it does have something to do with, has a connection to pleasure. But we're just going to just get some of the science out the way in terms of how I'm using it in relationship to food. Dopamine helps reinforce enjoyable sensations and behavior by linking things that make you feel good with a desire to do them again. That's very important to know, because dopamine is something that everyone generally has in them, and it does this. When you something you experience feels good to you, dopamine helps you remember that feels good and makes you and helps you want to do it again. So that's the chemical that they say is present for desire to do something again and again. This link is an important factor in the development of addiction. So that's why some people might link dopamine and describe it as the pleasure chemical. It's not quite the pleasure chemical, they say, but it's related to repeating behaviors that are pleasurable. And you might say, what the hell does that have addiction and dopamine have to do with food? Well, it actually has a direct relationship, and you'll see that it has consequences, as most addictions do. The seeds of addiction, they say, are generally speaking, when you experience positive sensation and dopamine is released into the pathway of the reward center, your brain takes note of what triggered the sensation, like what it was you took, any cues from the environment that can help you all find it again. Did you experience it at night, or, you know, what you were doing, you know, or where you were with a certain person and that happened? So it says dopamine helps all of that occur. So when you're exposed to these environmental cues, you're beginning to feel the same drive to seek out that same pleasure. This drive can be incredibly powerful, creating an urge that's hard to control. So you ever had ate something and been reminded of that thing that you ate by certain environmental things or certain people or certain, you know, like parties or things like that, and you had the urge for that particular thing? They're saying that that's real, and it's basically they're saying it's a reason for why that's occurring. So theoretically, When you eat something, this is from provocative thought. Theoretically, when you eat something, you, like the dopamine in your brain, will stimulate or motivate you to repeat the behavior. In this case, eat more. That's what we're talking about. Stay with me. This could lead to addiction or eating disorder. The addiction could lead to obesity or other illnesses, which we'll get into later on. It all could lead to an increase in profit for the particular food industry that laces their food with sugar. But in particular, there's more to this point than sugar. So sugar is one of the culprits, but apparently it has two sidekicks. From Helio and Doc Endocrine today again, they say that the growing obesity epidemic in the U.S. is helped along in part by a food industry that uses a combination of science and expert marketing to influence vulnerable consumers. That's all of us. We all eat, and we all think that make an assumption that the food is safe and that it's not going to harm us out of the ordinary. At least, I think we do anyway. But she wouldn't buy. I don't think you'd buy something. Well, we're not going to get into that. It said the human biological evolutionary systems are designed to be vulnerable to many of the popular convenience foods marketed today, which are typically manufactured with added sugars and salt to keep a person craving more. Salt the other culprit, that's the co-defendant in this case. All right? Michael Moss, a journalist for the New York Times and author of the book Salt, Sugar, Fat, which is the third culprit, How the Food Giant Hooked Us, said during the presentation at Obesity Week in 2018. This is an industry driving to get us to not just like their product, answer to the first question, but to want more and more, Moss said. So they're not just trying to get you to like. I'm going to use Tasty Cake as an example. They're not just trying to get you to like Tasty Cake. They're trying to get you to want to need Tasty Cake. I need a Tasty Cake every morning. I need a Tasty Cake after I eat every day. I need a Tasty Cake every Friday. I get my Tasty Cake on, you know, stuff like that. So anyway, so they said food companies are businesses, or he called them an evil empire, actually, set out to make people sick. He said food companies are businesses that want to sell as much product as possible. Best way to sell a lot of any product is to have people addicted to it, because then you have a consumer who feels the need to have purchased your product. He goes on to say consumers play a role and must educate themselves and be actively aware of the ingredients that go into the food they eat. Which you read, if you do a little enough reading on the labels, you probably won't eat nothing. And I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing, but because according to salt, sugar, and fat, you know, that's about almost everything we eat. If you buy processed foods anywhere, I mean, at the supermarkets. So it said, whereas healthcare professionals must do their part to promote healthy eating habits and make patients aware of the connection between food and obesity. I don't know, but healthcare, I'm taking a wild guess here that they make a lot of money off of people being obese and unhealthy. So the healthier you are, the less you're going to need the services of a healthcare professional. I hope it's not that diabolical, but who knows? Anyway, they say it's food language. He goes on to say, words like craveability, snackability, and Moorishness are some of the terms used to describe foods designed to make a person consume as much as possible. Bliss point, a term coined by American market researcher and psychologist Howard Moskowitz, is considered the amount of an ingredient such as salt, sugar or fat, which optimizes tastiness, which makes it feel the best. And they mean by the best, they mean that taste that brings you back to get more of that. And I mean for some people, you know, food is about food tasting good, tasting very good. That's how you come back. That's how you get their favorite steak shop. That's how you get your favorite bakery. That's how you get your favorite chicken wings and stuff like that, your Chinese food that you like. That's how you get all your favorite things that you like in a supermarket. So it's, you know, your taste buds and, you know, your the chemical reaction that it causes in your body. But it just sounds like all that's been scientifically manipulated by the food industry, causing us to want an excessive amount of whatever product it is, to the point that we don't say no, or I've had enough, when we should say that's enough. That's what they're saying. So they have this thing called the mouth feel. It's a term used to describe the perfect crunch of a chip. I ain't know a chip had to have a perfect crunch, but they got one. And they had this. Somebody sat down and thought about this, and I guess they had some chip eating tests, I guess, you know, research or projects, see which one was what. He goes on to say, though, he talked to the nutritionist. He realized the problem was not that the industry engineered the bliss point for soda. It's that they marched around the grocery store adding sugar to products that didn't used to be sweet. Now, if you read on the side of some products, you see, like, sugar, something like, not sweet, but it has sugar in it. Which I often wonder, like, what in the world they put sugar in here, like bread and stuff like that? Why are you putting sugar? And what is this whole thing about sugar? And, you know, what's going on with that? You know, I always wonder that myself. But after reading this, I get it. He said, so they start putting sugar in everything. So sugar apparently is the most common denominator. Bread now has sugar in it. Some yogurts have as much sugar as a serving of ice cream. What this does is create an expectancy in us that everything should be sweet. So when you drag your kids into the produce aisle, that's why you have a rebellion on your hands. Your kids don't want no fruit because everything that you're giving them, everything else, is sweet. So they got like what we used to call it, a sweet tooth. The bliss point of processed food is the point where food reaches the level of being as delicious as possible, yet not so satisfying. You don't get satisfied that we don't want more. That's an addiction, right? To take it back to the chocolate cake example, a chocolate cake will end up being sweet enough at some point that we'll feel satisfied and stop eating. With processed junk food, however, we never really hit that my taste buds are satisfied level. And that's very interesting. Okay? Do processed foods have this point from how stuff works? This is by Deborah Ronka. How do food scientists formulate the foods we'll like the most? How do you even get to that? You know, because everybody got different taste buds. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you get to a bliss point anyway? She says that a bliss point is a ratio of three nutrients our bodies are programmed to seek out. Apparently, fat, sugar, and salt, our bodies are programmed to seek these things out. These three compounds trigger all 10,000 plus of our taste buds and send a message to the pleasure receptors of our brains that makes us think more, more, more. Natural foods also have these three nutrients, but not in the perfect bliss point ratio where we don't feel satisfied. It's very, very important that we all know when to say no for anything that we're doing. Too much of anything is not good for you. Too much of a bad thing is extremely harmful for you. Science, however, has taken care of that. She said fat, sugar, and salt all work together to make food taste better and make us want more. It goes on to say, fat gives food like chips and crackers, a smoother texture. Salt makes the chemical taste of processed food. No, salt masks, like it covers up the chemical taste of processed food, and is the cheapest spice around. Sugar hits the pleasure points in our brains and increases the shelf life of products. I never knew, I thought salt might do something like that, but they say sugar increases the shelf life. Food manufacturers can tweak the ratio of fat, sugar, and salt, and then taste test products until they reach the right this point with taste tests. That means I get about 100 people, 50 or whatever, and we start tasting them, see how they eat it, and do they want more? They want more, but it has this amount of the ingredient, or does this amount cost them to want more, and does this amount cost them to just, man, they can't stop eating it. They'd rather eat that than food. So I'm exaggerating a little bit, but maybe not for people who have problems with eating. Anyway, bliss points determine a food crave level, which in turn determines sales and profit. So the more you want, crave what I make, the more money I'm going to make. So it has nothing to do with nutrition or anything like that. It has something to do with you buying this product. So that's like buying a bag of dope. The more somebody craves it, right, the more dope you're going to sell. So it's the same thing with this. If you have the craving, to feel the need to have something, there's where you tie the addictive behavior into the craving and the consumption of food. In this part, and particularly with the food industry, you have people actually mixing up a chemical, a solution to make you crave it. So they want you to become addicted to their food, to crave it. That means if you do eat the right stuff, you gotta have that Twinkies, you gotta have that chocolate, that you gotta have whatever it is, you know, that you got that was sweet, you know, or whatever. Maybe that chip. It was a saying about Lay's potato chips one time. You know, no one can eat just one. Who would have known? One well-known example of the bliss point research is Dr. Pepper soda. They go on to say, when attempting to formulate a new flavor, the company went through 61 formulas and 4,000 tasting events. So they serious about this. That's 4,000 events, which allowed their food scientists to continually tweak the recipe until they found the ultimate bliss point. That is a lot. You would think that this time I just made that. Okay, sweet. It tastes good. You like this one? This one, this one. 4,000 taste contest events. That is crazy. The resulting soda they made from that, those taste events were cherry, vanilla, Dr. Pepper, which I've never tasted. One of the company's most successful products ever. 4,000 tasting events, it better be. 61 formulas, that better be the best soda on the planet. That's a lot. Anyway, can you blame food companies for wanting to profit from providing the most sensibly delicious food you ever had? How about those Lay's potato chips? No one can eat this one. Who would have known how real that slogan was? Who would have known that some of us would eat ourselves to death or into poor health? What you need to know about how your taste buds, your tasty bliss point, affects your chronic illness. So this stuff tastes good. Good, right? We love it. Tastes good. Gotta be good for you. Ice cream. Just think about ice cream, popsicles, cereals, or sweet cereals. You got all this stuff. You got potato chips. You got all this stuff. You got a whole aisle. Like, you know, you can't even make up your mind which one you want. That's how much of this stuff exists. And it tastes good. But it's a reason why you keep coming back for it, more than just your taste bud. So, this is by Sue Ingebretson from ProHealth.com. She says, have you ever taken a bite of food that's so yummy, so delicious, and so powerful, powerfully delightful that you literally close your eyes and just savor it? That's exactly what the food scientist wants, hope you do. Because it got you hooked once you do that, right? She goes on to talk about food serves a purpose. This might seem so basic, you'd be tempted to skip this part, but don't miss out on how this purpose connects to chronic illness. Food serves to fuel our bodies for optimum performance. Yes, that's the simple part, right? We all know that. I think we know we need food to survive, to be strong and healthy. That's what it's supposed to be for, right? But they got it. But they got it. They switched it to something else. The industry. Our three essential micronutrients. There are three essential macronutrients: healthy proteins, healthy fat, and healthy carbohydrates. The veggies, right? They work together beautifully to keep the body functioning at peak level. The body absorbs the nutrients found in these foods and then has the resources to rebuild damaged tissue, fight inflammation, and overcome disease. So I guess you could figure out what this other stuff is going to help, is going to be, the effect it's going to have on your body. Because this is the good stuff. Rebuild damaged tissue, fight inflammation, and overcome disease. That's very, very important. They said for more information to determine how your macronutrient balance needs are, you can check out Do You Know Your Nutrition Type. Check that out. Google it or look for a book or something like that. Check that out. I'm not going to get into that. Just want to keep talking about the food industry and chronic illnesses and at this point and addiction. So she goes on to say, but our digestive systems simply aren't designed. Oh no! What she says: fueling our bodies at regular intervals provides a much-needed break from our activities. Mealtime is a space in our day for deep breathing, reflection, contemplation, perhaps prayer, and oh yes, food. She says, I know that many of you have a go-go-go lifestyle, but our digestive systems simply aren't designed for that. Basically, she's saying when you eat, it's for the rest, for the relax, so that your food can digest properly. There's no eating on a run. All the stuff that people do, that's not supposed to happen. It's bad for your body, okay? There's a reason that the parasympathetic nervous system response, relaxation, right, is often referred to as the rest and digest response. Mealtime is a respite, not a pit stop. I just kind of said that, right? The sympathetic nervous system response is just the opposite. It's our stress response. The body responds by pumping out stress hormones, bringing us into that all too familiar fight or flight response, right? So you get that. That's not good for you to be pumping that hormone out all day. That's what she's saying. Those dealing with chronic illnesses, including fibromyalgia, have a deep and abiding connection to this fight and flight state. We deal with the imbalance of hormone function, digestive upset, and other symptoms that result from this constant feeling of being on high alert. The alternative is to look for ways to efficiently digest our food, making mealtime as pleasurable and relaxing as possible is one way. Consuming foods that are natural, nutrient-dense, and fiber-rich is another. Natural, nutrient-dense, that's all right, and fiber-rich is another, but not all foods fit into this category. Going back to the foods that make you feel good, right? They call them the pleasure food. They're saying, getting back to your palate and pleasing food. Do you connect emotions such as joy, happiness, and even bliss to them? For many of us, food and pleasure are synonymous, are the same thing. Food, bliss, oh, that was good. You know, that tastes good. Not too many people are going to eat something that doesn't taste good to them. And that's why we have all these seasonings and have all these little recipes and everything. Those recipes are there to make the food taste better. Usually using salt. Some people still use fat and sugar, right? And I've seen people put sugar in spaghetti. I thought it was weird. But I guess, you know, it does something to the taste and makes people, you know, like it. You know, it's weird, but, you know, when I did eat spaghetti, I didn't like anybody put sugar in it. But for some people, it has that effect on them, I guess. So I wasn't captured by that sugar in my spaghetti. Anyway, so we have a relationship with food rather than view it as something that we're simply fueled by. So we look at food as a pleasure thing instead of something we need to eat to survive. So it doesn't matter if it tastes good or not. I need to eat this. I'm going to eat it because it's going to help me live, increase my quality of life, and et cetera like that. No, we look more towards things that taste good and the hell with, you know, what it's going to do to my body because this tastes so sinfully delicious. I'm going to eat it. I'm going to eat as much of it as I can, and good health is out the window, right? That's basically what he's saying, what she's saying. She said she was supposed to have been working in a cafeteria, right? And she called the foods that they serve comfort foods. And she said they were highly processed foods and that we find in the grocery stores. She said that they had to she dished out foods that were calorie dense but nutrient deficient. So I look that may look like the thing that the foods that you want that you should be eating, but it's not. And, you know, unfortunately, we are, you know, not a society that grows our own food and things like that. We're kind of a urban industrial technological society. So not we depend on other people to grow, not just prepare, but to grow and produce and distribute our food, which is means that you really don't know what's happening with your food. You don't know what you eat. Anyway. And so instantly, she began to notice a pattern in the customers. She realized that she could predict their food choices pretty good. She anticipated the seconds of their tendency toward indecision. She could see that they were, you know, torn between this one and that one and stuff like that. So she said, basically, she said food can be just a fuel or perhaps so much more. For some particular few, foods are connected to emotional circumstances such as memories, events, other people, and even comforting love. I guess that would be that wedding cake. That's why they get that nice, delicious, I'm assuming it's a delicious wedding cake. And you know, y'all taste that. Y'all, you and your wife, y'all, or husband, eat the cake together. Bam, so that's locked in your memory. Now, that's the wedding. I remember that cake tasted like my wedding cake. That was good, you know, so I don't know. Anyway, there you go. So when this connection is made, our ability to make healthy food choices is actually, you say, gets hijacked when you started connecting food to your emotion. And I guess the connection is sugar with his two buddies, salt and fat. So our focus is redirected towards unhealthy foods, which leads to devastating results for anyone trying to heal. So here we go again. Now we're talking about foods that don't help you heal. And we talked about inflammation and things like that, right? You know, so very, very important because, you know, a lot of times you get older, you start getting arthritis and all kinds of things wrong with your body and things like that. So maybe that's just stuff catching up with you. Diabetes and things like that. Maybe that's combination of all these processed foods, the sugar and his two buddies, salt, fat, doing their work on you. They just, you know, they just don't knock you out in the first round. They take you to the 15 rounds of just beating you down, and you don't know it. You don't know it to the end of the last minute of the 15th round, and it knocks you off your feet. Maybe that's what's happening there. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, but it sure looks that way to me. One factor in this scenario is called the bliss point, she says. These are the people, other people who are familiar with the bliss point. So it's not anything I'm making up. It's something these people are talking about in the industry. So she says, when it comes to food, there's an ingredient combo that it creates eating experience, right? In fact, when this perfect combination hits the tongue, the brain's pleasure zone fire out signals that scream, that's good. Eat more. That's pretty primitive, too. Anyway, these particular foods are also referred to as highly palatable. All right, they feel good in the mouth. You like it. It's good. Oh, man, it's really good. So, you know, so while the compelling nature of mouthfeel can be present both in natural foods and in highly processed foods, they say the addictive nature, again, the addictive nature of bliss point is man-made. It's a man-made processed phenomenon. The addictive nature of bliss point, right, is a man-made processed phenomenon, which means that, so you can get my point here, somebody is purposely trying to make people addicted to food. That's a problem. Okay? That should be a problem anyway. If you don't have a problem with what I'm saying by now, maybe you haven't heard me. I'm going to keep repeating it until the show's over. Because the bliss point is an addictive nature, right, that is a man-made processed phenomenon. Somebody's purposely trying to cause you to be to overeat, to overindulge, which leads to obesity. And if you think obesity is not a problem, we'll get to that a little farther around. If you think overeating and overeating the wrong types of foods is not an issue, that is such a small thing, we'll get to that too, because some of the things that you are seeing and all these chronic illnesses that you see people develop comes from some of this. Okay? It's not everything, but it's enough. They said it's scientifically manufactured to be addictive and to leave us craving more. Something's wrong with that picture. Said if you don't find, she's saying if you don't find an alarming, she's going to explain it to you all why you should. And she goes into the whole thing all about the scenario, how you plan to eat a few packaged cookies, but instead find yourself eating all of them, or at least significantly more than you planned. So I'm gonna eat two of these right here. But I used to like the Piani. Well, I should like some kind of cookie. But it's an Oreo cookie. You might say, I'm gonna get two of these. Chocolate ones. Stick it in the milk. Wham! Right? Man, that was good. Get two more. Just two more. Just two. Wham! Okay, two more. Let me get four more. Man, before you know, you ate that whole row. She's talking about stuff like that. So, same thing with chips. Same thing. You just grab a couple of chips out the back. Eat a couple of chips. Well, you know, you're crunching the bag up. Man, it was good. And that was a family size bag. You understand what I'm saying? So, anyways, that's what she, kind of stuff she's talking about. These foods are designed to make you not say, hey, that's enough. That's enough for them. Man, I'm telling you, it could happen. It's not just sweet. It's things that have sugar in it, salt in it, and fat in it. And sugar, they say, I guess sugar is the most prevalent culprit here because they have sugar in things that are not supposed to be sweet, which is, I mean, we should be asking the question, you know, why do you put sugar in salt crackers? What's up with that? Oh, well, now we know what's up with it, but I'm just saying, you know. She goes on to say, food manufacturers employ food scientists and food engineers to create this bliss point experience. They're working hard to get you addicted, right? The foods they create actually blunt the consumer's natural healthy response that tells them when to say when. I'm going to say this again. The foods they create, the scientists and food engineers, right, that are hired by the food industries, right? The foods they create actually blunt, impair the consumer's natural healthy response that tells them when to say when. When to say when means when to say stop. When to say that's enough. It has nothing to do with me getting full up on this thing. I'm not going to eat this whole pack of cookies. I'm not going to eat this whole row. I'm not going to eat this whole bin of ice cream or leopard. I'm not going to eat the whole bag of Lay's potato chips. Somebody else might want some. You understand? So they're saying that your natural healthy response is blocked by this these people creating this point experience. So you're hooked. Where's the three magic ingredients again? Okay, she goes on to say, she said, I refer to them as magic ingredients in the heading above, but perhaps they should be called tragic ingredients. Okay, I'm going on. She says processed sugar, processed salt, processed fats. These three ingredients are studied, experimented with, and combined with other artificial flavorings, additives, and chemicals that are literally designed to trigger this bliss point reaction. Processed sugar, processed salt, processed fat, added, studied, experimented with, combined with artificial flavorings, additives, and chemicals, right, that are literally designed to trigger this point reaction. We have some more culprits here in this scenario. Unfortunately, when it comes to engineering that takes place in food laboratories, the ultimate goal is profit over your health. The ultimate goal is profit over your health. One more time. The ultimate goal is profit over your health. This means that configurations are scientifically designed to use the cheapest, low-quality form of these main ingredients as possible in order to create the highest profit possible. That's economics, right? I'm going to spend the least amount of money to make the most amount of money, right? So you could have just figured that out on your own, that whatever they're doing, they're not spending the most amount of money that they can on it. They're spending the least amount of money on it. Sugar is a common denominator here, she said. Even salty foods are infused with added sugar. Foods such as salad dressings, spaghetti sauce, soups, and more all contain added processed sugars. So that's to get your palate used to that sweetness. Barry White had a song like that. Sweetness is my weakness. That's true. It's true of the food, too. Considering that sugar is more addictive than cocaine. Is it any surprise that our taste buds become hijacked? So sugar, did anybody know that? Anybody even think that sugar is addictive? Because we give our kids sugar all the time. During the holidays, everybody's getting hijacked on sugar. Kid's birthday, big cake, bam, ice cream, bam. All right? They're saying sugar is more addictive than cocaine. I did a show about sugar a couple years ago. Maybe I need to do that show again, because I think that was 2 years ago I did sugar. Anyway. Moving along, she goes on to say the optimum amount of sugar in a product became known as the bliss point. Food innovators and scientists spent a huge amount of time formulating the perfect amount of sugar that will send us off over the moon and send products flying off the shelves. That Michael Moss, I just read that. She's quoting Michael Moss in her article. She goes on to say, are you confused about the wide variety of names that food manufacturers use to hide sugars in your food? If you'd like a handy way to figure out the sugar that hides in your package labels, check out the handy 60 Ways to Hide Sugar in Labels. right? Check that out, y'all. 60 ways to hide sugar in labels. Download the guide because they tell you about all the different names that they have for sugar that they're not saying sugar. So when you see that, you know, these people are trying to create the craving and perpetuate the addiction and the sales of their product at the risk of your health. And you should be very, 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 very concerned about that. I'm going to get into that pretty soon. Your body is saying when you the taste of when you connect to this point there, you're saying basically your body is being hijacked. So, bam, it tastes good to you. You just go directly to that. So whatever it is you're doing, you bam. How many people have done that? How many have you ever seen something healthy like a salad, and you don't want that? You want that sweet? You want that sweet potato pie over there instead? You know. So here's what an activated this point response does. It triggers you to eat more. It triggers you to eat mindlessly. How you hear that? It triggers you to eat the same food repeatedly. Food manufacturers know and bank on this phenomenon. All right? It triggers you to eat more, triggers you to eat mindlessly, triggers you to eat the same food repeatedly. What's that going to lead to? Obesity and illness, right? So I just told you the ingredients in there, but none of the stuff that they're making the stuff with is not good for you. It's not the best thing for your body. It's like, you know, if you had a brand new car, you had a what? What's a nice little car out there? You had a Jaguar. But you put cooking oil in the engine? No, you would dare. You wouldn't think of that. So, but y'all put a lot of stuff in your own engine. I mean, we do. Cool mate. Put a lot of stuff in our engine that we're not supposed to, and we wonder why we can't get up and down the steps. You can't do what you used to do. Why are you tired? Why you can't go to sleep, right? Let's say processed foods account for over $1 trillion. Yes, that's a trillion, not a billion, trillion per sales per year in the United States. All right? That's addiction for you, right? Drug business works the same way. All right? Food can either serve as a nutrient powerhouse to build your wealth, or it can be the very thing to sabotage your health, right? Your health and tear you down. All right? So if you don't put the right things into your body, and I'm not trying to scare people, I'm just trying to inform you. If you don't put the right type of nutrients in your body is going to suffer. You're going to get arthritis. You're going to get kidney failure. You're going to have disease. If you're sick, sugar feeds disease. We're going to get to that later. I don't even know if I have enough time to get into all of this because we don't have a lot of time. I'm just going to read a couple of things that these this stuff causes. Eating too much sugar raises your risk of gaining weight and the health problems that are associated with being overweight. Now, being overweight is a serious problem. This is not a hit on people who are overweight. This is a serious issue, and we need to address it to save lives. You are more likely to suffer diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer, and many other health conditions when you indulge your sweet tooth too often. And considering that these products are made to have you crave them and eat them mindlessly, we're in a lot of trouble. Table sugar isn't the only culprit when it comes to sugar. Sugar goes by many names on food labels, including corn syrup, dextrose, fruit juice, glucose, maltodextrin, maltose, and molasses. Diabetes. Sugar provides excess calories that are easily and rapidly absorbed by your body. That's one reason your risk of developing type 2 diabetes rises along with sugar consumption, according to a 2004 study from the Journal of the American Medical Association. In fact, adding just one sugar-sweetened beverage to your family diet almost doubles your risk, says lead study author Matthias B. Schultz, Diabetes World Health Organization. The number one, the number of people with diabetes has risen from 108 million in 1980 to 422 million in 2014. The global presence of diabetes among adults over 18 years of age has risen from 4.7% in 1980 to 8.5% in 2014. In 2016, an estimated 1.6 million deaths, 1.6 million deaths were directly caused by diabetes. Okay? This is not a joke here. Heart disease, consuming too many carbohydrates such as sugar, significantly raises your risk of developing a lipid profile that in turn increases your risk for cardiovascular disease. It's one of the major killers in the United States, according to a 2010 study published in the Journal of American Medical Association. The CDC said about 610,000 people die of heart disease in the United States every year. That's one in every four deaths. All right? Heart disease is the leading cause of death for both men and women. More than half of the deaths due to heart disease in 2009 were men. Coronary disease, the CDC said, is the most common type of heart disease, killing over 370,000 people annually. Every year, about 735,000 Americans have a heart attack. Of these, 525,000 are a first heart attack, and 210,000 happen in people who have already had a heart attack. Other obesity-related diseases include high blood pressure, stroke, gallbladder, and liver diseases, osteoarthritis, gynecological problems such as infertility, respiratory problems, sleep apnea, and colon, breast, and endometrial cancer. That's like skin cancer, I think, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. You are overweight if your body mass index is 25 or higher, and obese if your index is 30 or higher. You got to go to the doctor and figure out what that all means to you personally. That's what those numbers might help you out, but your doctor should explain it to you anyway. The CDC obesity is common, serious, and costly. The prevalence of obesity was 39.8% and affected about 93.3 million of U.S. adults in 2015 to 2016. Obesity-related conditions include heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and certain types of cancer, and some of the leading causes of preventable premature death. The estimated annual medical cost of obesity in the United States was $147 billion in 2008. The medical cost for people who have obesity was $1,429 higher than those of normal weight. Okay? The West Virginia Statistics Center Division of Health Promotion said, according to the National Institutes of Health, obesity and overweight together are the second leading cause of preventable death in the United States. Behind tobacco use. An estimated 300,000 deaths per year are due to obesity epidemic. These statistics will help you see how serious this is. Sugar appears to be the wolf in sheep's clothing of the processed foods. So this is very, sugar consumption is prevalent in the United States. In 2011, published in its circulation, found that added sugar accounted for 21.4 of the daily calories among 2,157 teenagers in the 1999 to 2004 National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. They went on to say per capita, sugar consumption in 2010 was almost 132 pounds. That compares to almost 113 pounds in 1966. In 1915, it was 63 pounds. In 1985, it was 12 pounds. In the 1800s, it was 12 pounds, I guess, and 63 in 1985. Well, anyway, you see it just going up, up, up. That's the addition of sugar in all their product things. To cut back on added sugars, be, they say, very aware of the word sugar on anything that you read. The American words ending with O-S-E, O-S-E, are probably sugar, right? So, World Health Organization recommendation for sugar intake to be 10% of what they person eat. The sugar industry got U.S. congressmen to write a letter threatening to pull its funding for the World Health Organization. 5 months later, the recommendation disappeared. Ain't that sweet? So, you know, you're not even being represented by your representative. Because if they had any of this information that I'm talking about, they would be listening to the World Health Organization about reducing sugar. They would at least tell these people to stop putting sugar in things that aren't sweet. And that might go into a lot of legal stuff like that. But based on this information about sugar, I don't need sugar in my peanut butter. I don't need sugar in my potato chips. The potato chips, as bad as they are, you don't need to make it worse by putting sugar in it. So that's part of the problem that we have here with the bliss point. The bliss point helps get us to this point, to the point of obesity and or chronic illnesses. Look, in some communities, you see a lot of dialysis centers. You know, so, I mean, you know. There's just so much going on. Do you think it's all drugs that's moving people there? Do you? It doesn't seem like it. Seems like we have an issue with the food industry, who are spending lots of money trying to get us and keep us addicted to their food so that they can make their build their trillion dollar empire. What say you, America? What say you all over the world? Are we going to stand for this? Are we going to try to make any changes? Are we going to make any changes in our life? Do we want to live a better quality of life? If you do, we need to start thinking, reading, and making better decisions about the food we eat. Even if you do choose to eat sweets and potato chips and things like that, limit the amount you eat. And I don't know how would you do that. Figure it out. I don't know. I don't have the answers to that. But we need to make some different decisions. We need to make sure that Congress, which is going to be extremely difficult, is representing, you know, the people. Because these guys didn't care what the World Health Organization said. If you ignore that, you don't care. You can't have wolves minding the sheep. And that's what you have. That's a sign that you have wolves minding the sheep. And it's time to go. I'm sorry, y'all. We only have 60 minutes tonight, but I hope that I've reached a couple of people. And if I have, please do your own research. You don't have to believe anything I said, anything the people that I have quoted said. Until next week, each one reach one, each one teach one. Do your own research, y'all. Good night.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Why is that? So I'll fight tomorrow. I think it's Fox Sports.
downright abusive. All right.